quorum here, and the folks that are here to testify and present are here as well. So, Council, please come to order. Would you call the roll, please, Carla?
Novick?
Here.
Whip. Fritz?
Yeah. Here.
Fish? And Saltzman?
Here.
Hales?
Here. And we have a single item this afternoon, item 1158.
Accept the American Disabilities Act Transition Plan Update.
Very happy to have this report here today. Dante James, I think, leads off the presentation. So come on up, and looking forward to hearing about our progress.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Council. I guess we're the only thing on the agenda because it's so important, so I like
it. It is important. We cleared our calendar for this.
Thank you. Really, as you know, I'm just going to do a quick introduction and allow Danielle to introduce our contractors and our guests here today. As you know, the Title II and Title VI program came over to the Office of Equity and Human Rights just past fiscal year. So with it came the culmination of the completion of the transition plan. So certainly what I would describe as the wisdom of counsel in moving the office or the program over to the office, I truly want to thank Fred Miller, Brian Enge, Tracy Reeve, Anna Kenwood, and the mayor for their support in really trying to consolidate or at least put a kind of a one-stop shop, if you will, in some sense of a civil rights office, which we're not yet, but putting everything in one particular place for the ease of people to be able to access issues related to certainly Title II and Title VI. And the Portland Commission on Disability has been a phenomenal supporter of the transition plan and the move and everything else, and its chair, Joe Vanderveer, have been extremely supportive and engaged and just important in this process beyond expression. So I truly want to thank them as well. The transition plan, as I said, had been ongoing before it came into my office, so I certainly can take no credit for this. Danielle has been shepherding this as it came over and before her, Shoshana, out of OMF and Brian Enge's shop. So we have reached the point of, I think, completion of this document. Now it's time for implementation, which will be part of the conversation today. And I've also asked that you get a sense of not just the nuts and bolts, but what makes this plan unique in terms of the city, what makes it unique in terms of the size of this undertaking, and how it can best be done. So I think that's what you'll hear. So it's not just going to be just kind of some dry information, hopefully, but we'll provide you with something to really engage in. So with that, I will turn this over to Danielle Brooks.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I'll be doing the dry portion of this presentation. So my name is Danielle Brooks, and I'm the City's Civil Rights Title VI and ADA Title II Program Manager, now in the Office of Equity and Human Rights. I wanted to thank you again for taking the time to listen to this presentation and consideration to accept the ADA Title II Transition Plan Report. I'm going to provide you with a brief overview and context. So I was fortunate enough to be around when these programs first started back in 2008 in OMF, first with the ADA responsibilities, and then the civil rights portion was added shortly after. Both programs are intended to identify and eliminate barriers and discrimination while simultaneously promoting social justice and equity, civil rights covering race, color, and national origin, ADA covering persons with disabilities. Social justice is a proactive reinforcement of policies, practices, attitudes, and actions that produce equitable power, access, opportunities, treatment, impacts, and outcomes for all. To do this work, we have to look beyond individual acts and challenge discrimination that has evolved over time into a subtle, embedded form of institutional discrimination and systemic biases and barriers, characterized oftentimes by unintended disparate impacts. As we take a broad scope to civil rights, our work requires us to be proactive in approach by identifying these inequities and barriers, as well as opportunities, and developing or redeveloping and institutionalizing policies and strategies, operations, capacity change that applies and translates equity lens into cohesive strategies and into our day-to-day work at the city. This transforms structural barriers to opportunities and ensures that we benefit that we share benefits and burdens of impacts. We do this with both the civil rights and with the ADA. Now, the ADA, or Americans with Disabilities Act, is a comprehensive federal civil rights law that provides protections to individuals with disabilities in different various areas. Title II specifically of the ADA prohibits state and local governments from discriminating on the basis of disability. Moreover, the goal of this and the mandate of the ADA is to promote equal access and full participation. The city works to eliminate barriers and ensure that every program, service, activity, facility operated and funded by the city is accessible to people with disabilities. So thus, the initial responsibility of the ADA Title II program way back in 2008 when it started was to revisit the transition plan. We had initially developed a transition plan in about 1993 when the ADA mandates first started with the city. Unfortunately, over time, as buildings changed, facility and elements changed, and some of the information became out of date, we were unable to track really the progress that the transition plan made. So it became necessary for us to update that information. So we spent a really long time gathering information, building understanding, capacity, and buy-in within our city. And we definitely tried our own forms of internal pilots with a transition plan and surveying in the city. And this all led up to the basically project that you see today. After a great bit of organizing and a lot of help, we ended up securing funding in, I believe, the 2010 fiscal year. We spent the last few years working with our consultants, MIG, and internal and external stakeholders to develop a plan that includes surveying or identifying barriers based on compliance with the 2010 ADA standards, categorizing these identified barriers, basically understanding which barrier removal will provide the greatest access to a facility, and scheduling the removal of these barriers based on different variables. It sounds pretty standard, but there are kind of some remarkable things about this project, and most of that has to do with the stakeholder involvement. We had a number of subject matter experts and representatives from the Persons with Disabilities community, particularly from the Commission on Disability and its predecessor, the Portland, Citywide Disability Advisory Committee, that basically really helped us at every stage. They helped organize political will. They were involved very thoroughly in project design, in the implementation, the surveying, contract, or even in the contract selection, prioritizing and scheduling. We had representatives from outside involved at every stage. Similarly, we had Bureau representatives involved at every stage of this project. We wanted it to be something that could be applicable to all of the bureaus and to their work. They put in significant time and ownership into this and really developed an implementation plan that merges with their own operations. So it makes this ownership citywide in the best sense of the word. In the end, the city's ADA contractor and partners surveyed 342 unique facilities and identified over 25,000 individual barriers and have scheduled them for removal. We've compiled these barriers into a database that can be used to track removal, and this work is already underway in many of the bureaus. So, again, this is really part of a larger equity framework. We've identified the barriers, in this case physical barriers, and developed an organized and institutionalized strategy to approach barrier removal. This living document will evolve as our institution does and ensure that we maintain our work and encourage and track our progress. So please bear with me for a moment because I need to extend some thank yous, some very critical thank yous to a lot of people who are involved. And again, there were a number of people involved. I'm not going to list them all, but I do want to call out a couple of people. First, to our director, Dante James. He inherited the project, but he's really taken an active and thoughtful role in terms of finalization and then in the tracking procedure. To Bob Keita, Brian Inge, Jeff Baer, all of Facilities Division and OMF, again, the project was housed with them for most of the length, and it wouldn't have happened without their management and oversight. Of course, thanks to all of the Bureau's representatives and to our community representatives, in particular Joe Vanderveer and Sue Stahl, who are from the Commission on Disability, and they're here to speak today on behalf of the project. Their knowledge, advice, input, expertise really kind of drove the project and also crafted it in a way that made it Portland-specific, but still with a universal design intent. A thank you to Shoshana Oppenheim, who managed the project. She was the interim program manager and really managed this project through the details and through to completion. It was really through her work and management skills that this project is what it is today. To the mayor's office and to Commissioner Fritz, who really spearheaded this work. You listened to and responded to community wants and needs, and really helped us from taking it to an idea to securing funding and offering continual support. So we really appreciate that. And then finally, I want to thank our consultants, MIG specifically, Tim Gilbert and Heather Busick. They have been a real pleasure to work with and helped us craft something that we think will go beyond a report into something that's usable and sustainable. So we're sincerely grateful. And with that, I'd like to pass it over to our principal consultant, Tim Gilbert.
Thank you so much, Danielle. And Dante, as a consultant, I just want to say it's been a pleasure working with your staff, with you, and with the people of the city of Portland. It's been a substantially unique project. And I'd like to point out a few of the points that I think that make it so. And I think that Danielle touched on many of them. The goals for the project were, of course, to comply with the requirements of a federal mandate, the ADA Title II requirements for a transition plan. But from the beginning, it was very clear that stakeholder engagement in developing a really implementable and effective project with planning tools that would live beyond the development of simple barrier list was the goal of this project. So I think that really represents a substantial, benefit to the community here. And I've been the author of maybe 100 or maybe more ADA self-evaluation and transition plans in my 20, 30 years of work. And I have to say, I think this has been the most comprehensive and the most community value-based project that I have worked on to date. So I want to applaud you and your community for the really rigor that it took to get this project done, and it took a lot. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here and present it to you, and have you acknowledge your staff and the community who worked so hard on this. As Danielle mentioned, the city has taken the staff has taken a very hands-on role in this project. A liaison from each city bureau worked very closely with us from the very beginning, from developing criteria for prioritizing facilities, for identifying those facilities, and working all the way through the Portland Commission on Disabilities right from the beginning, very active participants in the entire process with the staff. So these were meetings we held in concert with the community and staff, and very, very productive, and everybody listened to each other. And we had some good discussions about what should happen and what should happen first, second, and third, but I think they resulted in a consensus and the plan that you have before you. So that's a very substantial benefit. And the facility reports, which you don't have at your desk, if you have a copy of the plan, it looks a little bit thin, but I have to tell you that if you looked at the entire document list that comprises the ADA transition plan, you'd see a lot of paper, a lot of work. I mean, as Danielle mentioned, 342 facilities with thousands of barriers identified. This and the reports are very exhaustive and comprehensive. They have a conceptual solution for each barrier. They have a cost estimate. There are code reference numbers from both the federal and the state of Oregon codes that we were referring to, a categorization. These are going to be really valuable resources for staff in the coming years for both maintenance activities, basically a pick list for some of the simple things that have continued to happen. And frankly, many of the things that were listed in these reports have already been done because the staff has been proactive. We would meet with the staff and say, well, we've already done that. So this is important. We will talk a little bit more about the record keeping and how the challenges of record keeping in a in a large organization like the city of Portland with the bureaus, but that there's a strategy for that too, and developing criteria. We're using many of the criteria that were established by the ADA, which kind of represent the logic of access. In other words, let's get into these facilities first, make sure that people can have basic access to the facility or the park. Then let's make sure that the areas where programs and services and activities are provided are on that list. And that's really the second priority. In fact, the Title II of the ADA focuses on the programs offered in city facilities more than, the facilities. It's really the programmatic access that is the goal of Title II of the ADA. And then access to amenities. And then we identified features that may not be required to be modified because there might be duplicate areas or some other opportunities for providing programmatic access are available. And an example of that would be the Kenton Firehouse. We did a comprehensive physical survey of that historic building. We identified that there is a second floor there without an accessible elevator in it. And we worked with Office of Neighborhood Involvement to determine that meetings, public meetings, could be held on the first floor, and the second floor could be used as a staff-only area. That's a programmatic solution. So that's your staff working creatively to make programmatic access without immediately going to the solution of fix the building. So this is an important aspect of the ADA and a legitimate and appropriate way to provide access to the public without making extensive physical modifications. The other criteria that were used, and this set of criteria that were developed early on in the process with both staff and the stakeholders, were the level of use by the public, the number of people who might use a facility, geographic distribution, program uniqueness. If there's only one of something, then that it should be a target for improvements. But if there's multiple opportunities to provide a program, then we need to make sure that those programs, when viewed in their entirety, and that's words from the ADA, are accessible. So that's a bit of a community value, because how many basketball courts should be available and where should they be? How should the distribution be managed across city geography? So those were some of the criteria that we were that were used. One of the criteria unique to the city of Portland was that facilities that were identified as those being critical to people with disabilities and that are on public transit lines be considered for a priority. So that was, I think that was a good example of a unique and Portland-specific criteria that was applied to creating the timeline and the ultimately the plan of action, because this all does need to be translated into a plan of action. In fact, that plan of action is translated into a timeline, and I have to say that this is a target timeline. These budgets are not in place, but we using the rationale and the community value-based planning effort and working closely with the bureaus. I think that's an important element. This strategic plan was very carefully reviewed by each bureau. We've developed a framework, a target framework for a timeline. Many communities, all communities have to develop a time frame, and many communities that I've worked with over the years develop a very simple matrix. They basically list the name of the building, the location of the building, and a range of years in which accessibility improvements will be made in that facility. The city of Portland took this to a very much more advanced and rigorous step, really communicating to me and I think to the world that implementation is the goal of this process. All of the elements of the ADA reports and the planning effort are contained in a database that's being managed by the city, by Dave Gallett here, and he'll talk about this in a minute, in order to produce annual reports and kind of monitor improvements. Next steps in order to provide or to produce a compliant ADA self-evaluation and transition plan, which is required by the ADA, is to conduct an evaluation of city policies and programs. That was not in the scope of this particular aspect of the project, but that is certainly something that needs to be done. In addition, conducting an accessibility evaluation of the city's pedestrian rights-of-way, sidewalks, curb ramps, signalized crossings is part of the requirement for Title II entities under the ADA. And then to continue to implement the ADA transition plan, which I think is in good hands now. I'm very, as I said from the beginning, impressed with the implementation orientation of your city's staff and the community that supports it. So I just want to, again, say thank you so much to you as mayor and commissioners for supporting this project in the community and the bureau staff who have made it possible. So as a consultant, as I said, it's been a joyful project and a lot of work, but I'm glad to be here to help present this project. And I'd like to turn it over to Dave Gallett, who will talk about implementation.
Great. My name is David Gallett. I'm the Title II Access Coordinator with OEHR, and have been involved since February in the transition plan.
Thank you. And I just wanted to talk about some of the things that are continuing to go on and moving forward with the transition plan. One of those components is parks is still working on their categorization. I think, as you know, they've got an extension for their component of the transition plan. They're categorizing and scheduling their barrier removal, and that's in large part to the large volume. They're 75% of the facilities and almost 80% of the barriers identified in the plan. And they also have a unique position or hold a unique position in that the services they offer are offered throughout the city. I think Tim kind of mentioned, you have several basketball courts throughout the park system. Which ones are you going to actually want to make, which ones make the best sense to really focus on? And so they waited until everything was assessed and surveyed before they started their categorization and their scheduling. And once that's done, they'll reach out to do some public engagement and get comments, and then there'll be a final addendum of their portion to this transition plan. Also we are working on the self-evaluation portion of the transition plan, which really is looking at all the programs that are offered by the city. All the bureaus offer various program and services to the public. The plan right now is just the physical, the architectural barriers that were identified. We've kind of tried to look at best practices, similar cities, sizes, Seattle, San Francisco, who have done self-evaluations, to kind of give us some guidance or some idea of, how we're going to go ahead and go forward. Some of the challenges are identifying all those programs that are offered to the public, and then coming up with a comprehensive survey that the bureaus can look at and take to give us an idea of where gaps are in their services to people with disabilities in our community. Also, another component of the transition plan that needs to be completed is the public right-of-way, assessing the public right-of-way. And currently, PBOT is developing a plan. I think they're just finalizing a request for proposal to hire a consultant to develop a strategic plan on how they're going to go ahead and move forward with surveying or developing their plan to survey the public right-of-way and make that component of the transition plan complete. And lastly, and maybe most importantly, is tracking and managing our progress as we go forward. Currently, as was mentioned, we have a database that includes all of the individual barriers that were identified, and we're able to sort through those and say, which facilities are scheduled for this particular year by which bureaus, and our model is going to be to have a liaison at each bureau, preferably the one that's been working with us up until this point, who knows the transition plan and is also familiar with this tracking tool. And we'll keep in communication with them on what's coming up for them, what's been done, what's scheduled for minor maintenance in that particular year, what capital improvement projects are coming up, if there's any things that got pushed back or schedules, something's been rescheduled. We'll be giving, I'll be giving a quarterly report of what was scheduled, and they'll be responding back with where they're at. And then there's some redundancy on keeping track of our barrier removal. And hopefully with the Parks Bond passing, hopefully we'll get some funds for parks to get some of this, some of the barriers resolved. And I'd like to now invite Joe and Sue up from.
Okay, maybe.
Oh, any questions?
That does bring up a good point. I am very grateful to the voters of Portland for approving the parks bond. And there's up to $5 million in the bond for removing ADA barriers. Nice. We know, even though the parks component isn't going to be finished until next year, we know that there's at least $17 million worth of improvements that need to be done in parks. Mm-hmm. So for the other bureaus, is funding secured within those bureaus for the 14-15 and 15-16 improvements? There isn't we don't have a dollar figure, and the fiscal analysis for this council agenda item says that bureaus will be required to find it within their budgets. I can tell you that Parks cannot find $17 million within its budget. So what's been the discussion as far as I very much appreciate the categorization and the identification of what the barriers are. The council presumably needs to have a discussion about how we're going to pay for it and how does that relate to the plan's proposal for this is going to happen in 14-15, this is going to happen in 15-16.
So when things were scheduled, the bureaus were looking at like what they could do in years 1 to 3, 1 to 5. And
without additional funding?
Without additional funding. Currently the barrier removal will come from the funds that they have, from the budgets they have, and they'll have to work that in with either maintenance or if they get funding for a capital improvement or a renovation. But there are no specific funds that are allocated for Bureau ADA barrier removal at this point.
So part of the intention of this, of course, is to work within existing projects, and inform existing projects. So if there are capital improvement projects that are existing for those years, they were probably scheduled into that, so this information would be part of that, so things wouldn't be missed. And then additionally, in terms of just general maintenance, for example, we talk often about the door weights. Oftentimes, our maintenance staff will already be going through and checking on those things, and they can adjust door weights as necessary, for example, in part of their normal maintenance routine. So these things have been built into already existing structures that usually happen on an annual basis or within some timeline as well. But yes, bureaus do, there's no allocated amount necessarily within each bureau to do this work. It is a target and it's a goal. And the barriers exist either way. So the idea, of course, is to try and address them and for bureaus to think about prioritizing this in their future planning.
So I have a question, about the scope of the update. When we say city facilities in the list, we mean facilities that are owned by the city. We didn't review or we didn't include in this update facilities that we lease or where we're tenants. So, for example, for ONI, the only one that's listed is the Kenton Firehouse.
Right.
I thought we owned the East Portland Neighborhood Office building, too. But in most cases...
Water Bureau does.
Oh, the Water Bureau does. That's right. In most cases, the neighborhood district coalitions own the building or were a tenant in those buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't. And the same thing's true in the case of, I guess it's listed under police, East Precinct or Southeast Precinct, where the neighborhood ONI has a number of staff there. In other words, we haven't included in the scope of this review facilities where we're a tenant rather than where we are in an owner, right?
Well, any facility that the city owns or operates, leases or manages that provides public service to, so like an office building that is leased, that's only staff occupied, won't be covered in the transition plan.
So, for example, our office,
right,
is not if we lease
the
space.
Building,
well,
right.
We lease it from housing. Who leases it from the? So our office. And that floor was evaluated,
yes.
and adjustments and changes were made to come into compliance. The Water Bureau's building that is not a public access on its floor downtown wasn't surveyed. So it just depends on the public access aspect of the building itself. So some have no public access or public engagement necessarily, and others do.
But in terms of like the Commonwealth that is not necessarily owned by the city, but our city areas were in fact scoped. And usually that is up to, depending on who's responsible for making those changes, is dependent on the lease agreement between the entities.
Well, one reason I focused particularly on ONI was I was trying to remember who owned that building in East Portland, but the other was, well, those are quasi-public.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have a lot of citizens coming to those facilities, not just employees. So there maybe you're a little bit of a special case, whereas you're right, if it's a facility that we're leasing office space for the Revenue Bureau,
right.
There are staff, you know, we understand how to meet our own staff's needs or we make accommodation. But maybe for future reference, we might want to give some special weight to those ONI facilities or district coalition facilities where we, you know, it's sort of a arm's length transaction. We fund the district coalition, they rent mm-hmm. office space, mm-hmm. the public comes there. The color of money is still public.
Yep.
Right, that's right.
But the management of the building isn't.
And if I could just reinforce staff's statements that that's absolutely correct. The city may also own a property that is leased to another organization. If that's a private organization, you're not providing programs there, so therefore it does not belong on the city's ADA transition plan. It's really only about the programs and services that are offered.
Yeah.
And if you have a program operating in another agency, like for instance a school, a lot of recreation programs happen in school properties. The school also has an ADA Title II responsibility for mm-hmm. their plan. So many times these are negotiated elements in lease agreements.
Yeah, okay. Good. Thank you for that clarification. Other questions, concerns at this point?
So the transition plan just deals with access of the public,
yes,
not our employees to our facilities. Is that correct?
Correct.
You are covered as an employee under Title I of the ADA. If you become disabled or hiring a person with or without a disability, that is where Title I of the ADA comes into effect.
Yeah, and we have to make accommodations for our employees under that title. So,
I mean, just using the example of the Kenton Fire Station, mm-hmm. where you mentioned the employees moved upstairs and put the meetings room mm-hmm. downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So your question is, if there's an employee with a disability who has no access, there would have to be accommodations made so that employee could either have special space downstairs or there would have to be an accommodation so the employee could function mm-hmm. in that location.
Yeah. And the same thing is true in the buildings that we lease, right? If we're a
correct.
Tenant mm-hmm. for the Revenue Bureau
right.
down the street here, and in fact they do have employees who are disabled and they do need access, so the building is at least ADA compliant enough that our staff can get to work.
That's right.
So we're responsible under Title I. I'd forgotten the reference mm-hmm. to make the mm-hmm. accommodation for our own employees. Yeah. Other questions? Great work. Thank you. Okay. So let's hear from the next, next set of panelists.
Joe Vanderveer and Sue Stahl from the Commission on Disability wanted to offer some thoughts on this work. So.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Bill and Sue?
Yeah, and then PBOT's kind of a special case because they've got the whole street system, right? So,
that's a big one.
Which is fairly far out of compliance.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Joe. Welcome.
Thank you. Greetings, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Joe Vanderveer, as you know, and I'm the Chair of the Commission on Disability. Our commission eagerly supports this transition plan. We commend council for allocating the resources necessary to bring this assessment phase of the plan to completion. This is no small accomplishment, and it should be recognized as a significant step toward our city becoming more inclusive of all people with disabilities. We would like to extend our appreciation to staff involved in getting us to this point we are at today with the transition plan. In particular, we would like to recognize the work of Shoshana Oppenheim and David Gallant, for getting the actual integration of the transition plan into the Bureau's planning processes started on a solid footing. We also acknowledge that the dedicated work of the Bureau staff, such as Randy Webster and the Parks Bureau, and others too numerous to name, for their exemplary efforts thus far in laying out a timeline for the actual barrier removal work. MIG, the firm hired to do the actual transition plan, should also be commended for the excellent job they've done in assessing the extraordinary volume of facilities that make up our city. As Council is already aware, the Commission on Disability has been actively involved throughout the initial assessment phase of the transition plan. We are committed to continuing that involvement as the plan moves into the implementation phase and the actual barrier removal work progresses. We strongly encourage Council and the Bureaus to ensure that necessary funds are budgeted and appropriated to complete the barrier removal work in as short a time frame as possible. A substantial amount of resources and effort have gone into producing this comprehensive assessment so far, but that investment will only have real value going forward if the barriers identified are actually removed. We would like to take the opportunity to also encourage Council to go beyond this physical assessment phase of the transition plan and authorize the next equally important phase of the self-assessment, the programmatic accessibility analysis. Additionally, we would recommend that Council also consider authorizing a public right-of-way evaluation to be done as part of the overall comprehensive transition plan work. In closing, we want to thank Council for your ongoing attention to the needs of people with disabilities and for taking steps such as this transition plan work that are truly essential to achieving meaningful inclusion for Portlanders with disabilities in the civic and social life of our community.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Sue Stahl. I'm the chair of the Accessibility in the Built Environment Subcommittee, which is housed under the Portland Commission on Disability. I appreciate the time that you're taking to listen to us on this very important topic. Access to civic life by people with disabilities is a fundamental goal of the Americans with Disabilities Act. To ensure the goal is met, Title II of the ADA requires state and local governments to make their programs and services available to persons with disabilities. This requirement extends not only to physical access at government facilities, programs, and events, but also policy changes and governmental entities must make to ensure that all people with disabilities can take part in and benefit from the programs and services of state and local governments. This seems pretty simple, right? Common sense. The ADA transition plan will go far to ensure that those with disabilities have the ability to participate in civic life. The plan fits in with the city's goals stated in the Portland plan and the comprehensive plan. So how can someone not vote in favor for this? The question got me thinking of what would happen if this plan did not pass. What would it mean for individuals such as me with mobility issues? An impressive feeling came over me. Words such as can't, unable, sorry, unwelcome, entered my mind. So I came up with a list of activities that I and other individuals with disabilities would not be able to do if the ADA transition plan was not passed. We would not be able to use bathrooms in many centers, such as the Belmont Learning Center, some Portland Fire and Rescue facilities, and Portland Bureau facilities. And police bureau facilities because the stalls are too small or don't have grab bars. We would not open doors, exterior or interior, by ourselves in many buildings, such as the Water Pollution Control Lab and fire and rescue facilities. These have doors that are heavy to push open and they close abruptly, either on us or very close behind us. We would not feel safe using a smart park garage because we would be stepping in puddles and having walker wheels and wheelchair wheels get caught in the grates. We would not feel safe using pathways and sidewalks to the Moda Center and the Memorial Coliseum because they are too steep. Friends of mine who are blind could not distinguish a bathroom, conference room, waiting room, or exit, and such facilities at the Portland Police Bureau and Fire and Rescue facilities because of the lack of Braille signs. We could not visit open areas such as Dodge Park because tables and grills, the grilling apparatuses, mm-hmm. are inaccessible, and accessible campsites do not exist. We could not participate in boating activities because the boat ramps are too steep and there are no places to lock up our wheelchairs or walkers on the shore, such as the case in the Swan Island boat ramps. We would not have close and accessible parking in facilities such as the fire and rescue buildings simply because there are no reserved spaces. The list goes on and on describing what we cannot do now and what we would not be able to do in the future if this plan is not accepted. I am asking each of you to eliminate this world of cannots, would nots, sorries, and unwelcomes by voting in favor of the ADA transition plan and make Portland a truly accessible city for all. Thank you.
Thank you. Well done. Yeah, I think the scenario, what if, let's just not go there.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was really helpful in terms of listing some of the challenges that some of us don't have to think about all the time. You'll be pleased to know I just had my first briefing from the Parks Department leaders after the bond measure passed on Tuesday, and the very first item was the ADA accessibility issues. They are going to be coming to your subcommittee as soon as possible to get your advice on what to do first.
Right.
But it's one of the joys of that bond measure having passed that we will have some funding and that we will get those projects started
I'm
as soon as possible.
I'm very happy that it passed. I voted for it.
Thank you very much. So did a lot of other people, and we certainly appreciate that.
Worked. Thank you. Okay. Thanks very much.
Well, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners, that concludes our presentation. Thank you very much for your consideration of this. As you heard, this truly is about ensuring that all the residents of the City of Portland can engage in all of the activities that the city can provide. And this transition plan is just the floor. It's not the ceiling. And it's just the beginning. It's a living document. We will continue to do what we need to do to remove any and all barriers for all the residents of our city. So I would ask your affirmative vote in acceptance of this document.
Great. Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Thank you. Thank you both. And then do we have any folks signed up to speak on this item?
Yes, we have two people, Mary Ng and Benjamin Pickering.
Okay, come on up. Afternoon.
Good afternoon, City Council. My name is Mary Ng. I want to thank you so much for this beautiful presentation and for the beautiful company. I'm very excited, particularly about the sign language, and I hope that we can have as much signing at as many community gatherings and public meetings as possible in the future. I think it is a great source of jobs and increases the accessibility for all persons. And I want to thank you also for the closed captioning that is there, and I find it very, very helpful. And I want to thank all the hard work that's coming from Dante's team, and it's so good to hear all of you speaking. I wanted to speak specifically about invisible disabilities because I think they're one of the hardest challenges out there. And specifically, I wanted to share with you a very painful thing about a man who ripped my glasses off my face, crushed them in his hands, threw them down, knocked me down, and proceeded to stomp on my skull. So I'm living with brain injury, and I don't talk about it very much. And I've had other things such as an extreme instance of strangulation that I think may have given rise to chronic neck pain and tenseness in my neck and jaw, which are difficult at times. But I found some domestic violence literature about how women who suffer strangulation can sometimes have chronic problems with their necks or with their vertebrae. So I just wanted to throw that out there, because I think you may think of me as a normal person, but there's a lot going on there, including possibly chronic depression. And I really self-identify with post-traumatic stress disorder. And what I've read about it is that triggering situations can spike a cortisol response, where a low basal cortisol is accompanying what is known as PTSD, and that'll lead to kind of listlessness and apathy and tiredness and a feeling of chronic fatigue. But the second something is traumatizing and triggering, it can lead to an unnatural spike in the cortisol, which it's pretty hard to manage those kinds of symptoms. But hopefully, one other thing I wanted to share is what ACLU is doing around sign language. And sometimes in policing, if a person who signs as their primary mode of communication is being apprehended by police, signing can be misinterpreted as a resisting arrest or some kind of attempt to injure the officer. And so I think as much education we can give our police bureau around disability needs and issues and invisible disabilities will help all of us feel less barriers to access and to access state services, especially when we do become victims of crimes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Benjamin H. Pickering. I love and give everybody gratitude that was here today and gave their speeches. Thank you, and you guys are great listeners. That's awesome. I came to speak about they should have a bureau for disability lawyers, because there's a lot of disability out there that are being pushed around. I mean, I've lived with a brain injury. I've been hit by a 2-ton log on Easter morning. I got blindsided. But I can't even go on and tell you. It would take, I don't know, days to tell you of what I've lived through and the shit that I cannot believe. But the way people get respected, I mean, I think I always believe that you treat someone the way you want to be treated. And, like, I have had a few things in my life where I struggle with, and it's hard to have someone reached out and deal with someone or have someone help me to be ADD friendly with me and understand what I'm going through, what I need help with. Well, I came here to Portland because I was getting away from an attacker, and when I reached out in my hometown, there was nobody there fighting for disability, and there's nobody that I could even lean on except my family and my loved ones. And they're living their family life, taking care of their kids, doing what they're doing. Well, and, you know, once in a while, my oldest sister would go out of her way, and she takes care of 4 little baby dolls, baby girls, and she'd help me out when she could. But when I had went through being attacked, well, I came to Portland, and I was jumped and sexually harassed and held at knife point, and all my money was taken to where the state of Oregon, I was asking for help, and the cops came up to write a statement, and all they said was, get off this road, don't ever come back on this road. And I'm telling them, I'm hungry, I'm under distress, I have nothing, to where it led up to an Ace Tavern, I was beaten, brutalized by officers, because I asked for help at a bar, and they slid my face across the ground. And then not only that, when I went to court, they laughed about it and grinded my face in the ground. And I've been disabled. I don't go around. And I'm not a murderer or a criminal. And I wasn't doing no criminal act, but other than just going to that bar asking for help. And I just think that there should be a disability lawyers out there. I don't know why people deserve to get away with stuff like that. It's not nice. It's hard to be in disability. And I go through a lot of struggling. So it being courtesy up there, and I give everybody gratitude for fighting for disability and how hard they do fight for them. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. All right. No one else? No. Thanks very much, everyone. Well, then I'd like a motion, please, to adopt the report.
So moved.
Second. Mm-hmm. And any discussion? Then let's please take a roll call on that.
Novick.
Thank you very much for the report. Just as sort of an aside, as an illustration of the many barriers that we have yet to overcome in the city. There are 21,000 corners on our streets that lack ADA ramps. So we've got a lot of work to do. Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, and thanks to everybody who's been involved in this, to the staff, first in the Office of Management and Finance and now in the Office of Equity and Human Rights. It's very good to see this plan coming forward. It represents a lot of work in a lot of bureaus, and I do appreciate your mention of Randy Webster in the Bureau of Parks and in Portland Parks and Recreation. He is indeed stellar. All of our staff in all of our bureaus need to recognize and act. And I'm very happy that since I've been on the council, we now do have accessible bathrooms, accessible doors to the council chambers. We'll keep working on some of the other improvements that are necessary. And what this plan is talking about is barrier removal. There are many enhancements, such as the cochlear loops and other mechanisms that we can do to make things easier for everyone to participate in what we do. So there's a big challenge with the funding. Some of these things can be done as part of minor maintenance, and as we go, there's some pretty major projects. And although I am grateful to the taxpayers of Portland who will be paying up to $5 million for improvements as part of the bond measure, that doesn't go nearly far enough. And we are going to need to make some tough choices. But we know when there's 20% of our community who have a disability of one kind or another, there are a lot of people who need these accommodations, and we cannot wait. We have to prioritize them. I will in my bureaus, and I very much appreciate the partnership of the mayor and others to make sure that we do implement this plan as well as accept it. Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, thank you for this very thorough report to our consultants and to the Office of Equity and Human Rights and to the Portland Commission on Disability for your input as well. It's certainly on many levels can sound like a daunting challenge, and it certainly is. And it will take dollars to make these improvements, but these improvements need to be made, and we will get to them as soon as we can. It's going to take some time, though. So I appreciate the report and its thoroughness. Aye.
Hales.
Well, thank you. Good work all to our professional staff, to our consultants, to our amazing volunteers who put in so many hours and care so much about the city. Thank you all for this work. One thing that was just mentioned in passing that I think I'd like to highlight, and that is sometimes as a big city with lots of departments, we don't always work well together. We sometimes don't communicate well. We sometimes don't coordinate well. And my sense of this work that I heard here in this report today was that this is a case in which we really have been pretty comprehensive, and where all the bureaus really did put a lot of effort into the game and were fully involved in the work. And I appreciate that very much. We are one city. And, in fact, one thing that I suspect is true for anyone dealing with a disability, I'm fortunate in that I'm fully mobile, but I suspect no one really cares whose department it is that left the barrier in the way. The excuse that it's not my department is unhelpful to the disabled person who can't quite make it to that bus stop or who can't quite participate in that class at the Parks Bureau or who would love to be more active in the community but is blocked, literally blocked, by those barriers. So the fact that in this case we got past that bureaucratic silo mentality that sometimes plagues our efforts, in this case that wasn't the case, and I'm very happy to hear that. And that's actually an expectation that we all have as leaders of those bureaus, even though they're individually assigned to us. We expect that on a responsibility like this that all of our bureaus work together, and I'm really happy to hear that that was indeed the case and that those of you who led this effort created both that expectation and supported that good work that was done across the board in the city. So a fine piece of work, a great map for, as my colleagues have said, a lot of work ahead, a lot of dollars to spend, a lot of barriers to address, a lot of curb corners. So this report would be a lot thicker if we listed them all, but we at least now know that they're all here. Thank you very much. Well done. Aye. And we're adjourned for this week. Thank you all.